not for this particular group of people. When we get back, we are shifting gears completely into a topic with a guy named Tom Fournier, self-driving cars. Now, there's been a news story this past week about a guy who died in a self-driving car while he was apparently watching a Harry Potter movie. Don't exactly care to know all the details on that, but Tom Fournier has written a fantastic article. I linked to it on the blog at KOA News Radio. It is about the ethical concerns that surround self-driving cars. Now, you're thinking to yourself, ethical concerns? How could that possibly be a thing? Oh, man, there are ethical considerations into programming a driverless car that you have not even begun to think about. We're going to dip our toe in it with Tom Fournier when we get back. But Tim wants to make one last comment on Bangladesh. Tim, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just was, as you were going, you know, down that list of things, the people that got killed in Orlando and California and the cafe in Bangladesh. There again, one good guy with a gun could have mitigated all of those problems.
Yep.
That's all I wanted to say.
Yep. Appreciate the phone call, man. Very well said. Very well said. When we get back, Tom Fournier joins us to talk about the ethics of self-driving cars. And again, this is not something I initially thought about. I was like, hey, cool, I'd have free time if I had a self-driving car. I might be changing my mind about that whole thing. Because what is it with computers? Garbage in, garbage out? Is that what the old saying is? Self-driving cars are no different. Only with a self-driving car, it's not garbage in, it's decision-making that has a huge, huge impact on, on whether you live or die. I mean, it's not too dramatic to say it like that.
Talking about what really matters, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio. Now, Mandy Connell on 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
KOA News Radio time, 3:07. I have to correct something I said earlier in the show. The rumor about Guccifer being dead, he is not dead. It was just a rumor. And I reported a rumor, which I'm ashamed of myself about. So that is incorrect. He's still sitting in jail in Virginia, which is better than being dead, I guess. So you got that going for you. Now, our next guest is a guy we've spoken to once before, and he has another article out that is just as fascinating as the first article that I spoke with him about. His name is Tom Fournier, and he's the chief technology officer at Opus Inspection. And the article in question is about self-driving cars, which in and of itself seems like a nifty topic, but this discussion goes into an area that I had not considered at all. So welcome, Tom Fournier, to the show. Hi, Tom.
Well, hi, Mandy. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Welcome back. I have to tell you, your first article that we spoke about, I got more requests for copies of that story than anything I've done since I've been doing this show. So people were fascinated by your discussion about the philosophical arguments that are used in politics. And I think once they read this, I will tell you, I started this article, which is called "Will My Next Car Be a Libertarian or a Utilitarian?" And I thought, okay, it's about self-driving cars, but it's about so much more than that. It's more about the trouble we have in society when technology leapfrogs over what we've sort of set a framework for.
Precisely. That we're at a situation right now with the self-driving cars where we're on the cusp of really getting there. We're on the cusp of having vehicles that can drive more safely than humans. And that promises to change a lot in the automotive industry and transportation. The problem being that we really haven't seriously resolved the issues, both the legal issues and the moral ethical issues associated with these cars making the sorts of decisions that humans are making right now.
Let's start with why there's such a, it's happening really, really quickly. The technology is advancing at an incredibly fast rate. As a matter of fact, you quote a man in your article who believes that self-driving cars will be ubiquitous by what, 2030?
In that time frame, most of the folks who are involved in this industry see this happening over a period of the next 20 years, where within, in less than 10 years, it'll be an ordinary thing for you to drive your car to work and be sharing the road with several other cars that don't have human drivers. That's within 10 years. And then the estimates are that in less than 20 years, about 90% of the vehicles that are on the road are going to have a substantial amount of this automated features where the drivers in either are the humans are either not driving at all, or they're simply attending the vehicle while it drives them to work.
What are the positives of a self-driving car? Let's start there.
Great question, and there are huge positives, and we should be thinking about that before we get into the negatives, because this is being driven obviously by the technology having gotten to the point where it's actually feasible now, or it's on the verge of being feasible. But the government, the U.S. government, is strongly supporting this. I mean, in terms of money and investing in the research, and they're doing it because of the human toll associated with vehicle accidents. So, for example, the National Highway Transportation Traffic Safety Association, we call them NHTSA, they're in charge of a lot of things, but one of the things they're in charge of is investing in accidents and compiling statistics. Their report for 2014 was 32,675 deaths as a result of car accidents, and the report for 2015 just now came out, and it's gone up even further to 35,200 in 2015. These are people dying as a result of traffic accidents, and of those, 94% are because of driver error. And so the interest here in the government's part, and the very positive part about self-driving vehicles, is most, if not all, that human error caused tragedy can be gotten rid of, and it's think of, you know, how we all, especially in election season, get so worked up about terrorist deaths, but
sure.
So think about 32,000, 35,000 people dying every year. That works out to about 90 to 100 people per day, day in and day out, on our highways, and yet we're totally desensitized
right.
to it, because it's every year.
And so, we all know someone. I mean, when you reach a certain age, you know people who've been killed in auto accidents. I mean, that's just the reality of life. But I think that for many people, the cost-benefit analysis of, is it worth it to be able to freely move about our country in the way that we do, to say, oh, you know what, 35,000 people, considering that there are 300 million people moving around at the same time, that's the risk we're willing to take.
Right. And there are many folks, I think, who want the freedom to be able to control the vehicle themselves.
Sure.
Don't necessarily want to be at the mercy of the machine, so to speak. And that's part of where, you know, the whole thing needs more focus as this happens, because the technology is going to happen regardless of whether we want it to or not. There are some real good economic reasons for it to happen also. Let me give you some examples. We've got companies like Uber that are growing faster than most Silicon Valley companies. They're investing huge sums of money in these self-driving cars. They're trying to invent their own. We've got companies like Lyft who are partnering with General Motors to be able to use General Motors cars. And you know, their idea is that you can eliminate the driver from the car. You can make these cars smaller, because you know your typical trip in light duty vehicles, there's only one or two people in the car.
Mm-hmm.
These companies can manufacture huge fleets of two-person cars without a driver, and fine-tune them for economy so that they're getting excellent mileage, or they're all run on electricity because they're so small.
Right.
So they're banking on this. They're spending billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars, banking on this technology coming true within the next 9 years or so. And the idea is that a lot of people are going to, for the economic reason.
Right. Yes,
they'd like to drive their own car, but for economic reasons, they'd like to trade in, like to get rid of that, all that expense associated with their car and the hassle.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, we're seeing that a lot more in the sharing economy we have right now. I'm talking with Tom Fortier. Tom, I have to take a quick check, ironically, for traffic. KLA News Radio Time 316. I'm talking with Tom Fortier. He's got an excellent article out about driving, or rather driverless cars. Will my next car be a libertarian or a utilitarian? I've linked to it on my blog at KOA News Radio. So after the interview, you can go check it out. We were talking about sort of the economic reasons for self-driving cars, and that's a powerful motivator. And at the same time, if we could improve safety, there's a lot of wins in this, Tom. So now let's get to the more complex issues that, quite frankly, as I've talked about self-driving cars just as a matter of convenience, it never occurred to me that major philosophical, ethical concerns would need to be addressed before we could really move full bore into driverless cars. So let's talk about that programming a little bit.
Absolutely. And it kind of comes out just with the title of the article, because these philosophical principles are what drives, for example, a utilitarian, which is a liberal views, and libertarian, the libertarian view. And the way I like to explain it is actually the way, in philosophy 101, the way most students learn it is through these what are called trolley problems. And these are scenarios that were made famous by a female philosopher, Philippa Foot. And she, she was an ethics philosopher, and when she wanted to teach the differing principles associated with the ethics of making a decision that is a moral decision, she would use a trolley problem. So, take for example, imagine a trolley train on a track. It's going down a track, and there are five people that are trapped on that track. You have control of a switch. You could move that train to stop those five people from dying. The problem is, if you flip the switch, there's another person on the alternate track, but there's only one there. And so you're left with a choice. I mean, your choice is you can do nothing and five people die, or you could flip the switch and only one person dies. And so it raises this ethical dilemma, or would you be morally correct to flip that switch? Now, we make these sorts of decisions on much less significant basis, but the thing that the trolley problem brings to mind is the principles behind what's the rationale for either flipping the switch or not flipping the switch.
Mm-hmm.
And if you flip the switch, what you're basically doing is you're following the utilitarian principle that was made famous by John Stuart Mill, and this is back in the 1800s, where he was saying our decisions are correct, morally correct, the more so if we're increasing the overall good, less so if we're decreasing the overall good. So yeah, basically what he's saying is that we should make decisions to try and bring about the greatest amount of good for the greatest number of people. And so if you flip the switch to save the five people, but in the process kill the one, you're following a utilitarian view. And this is the basic principle under liberal politics. This is a fundamental principle in liberal politics, is that government should act so as to benefit the maximum number of people.
Mm-hmm.
If on the other hand, you feel queasy about flipping the switch because you see there's an innocent person on the other track, then you're following the general ideas, which started with Immanuel Kant. And Kant was, a philosopher, an early modern philosopher, about the time that America was breaking away from England. That was his time frame. And he was pushing the notion that people, humans, are ends in themselves. They are not the means to the ends of other people. And by that, he's talking about, for example, a king. Humans are not the means to the ends of politicians or rulers, that they are ends in and of themselves. And this principle was later picked up by Robert Nozick, who is perhaps, the foundational philosopher for the libertarian movement here in the U.S., And Robert Nozick points out that if it's improper for some person to come into your life and either enslave you or force you into a labor camp, force you to do something you don't want to do, if that's improper, then it's just as improper for society to do the same thing to you, and or government to do the same thing, to force you to do something. And that's where a lot of libertarian arguments come from about taxation and so forth. But this very same argument drives the notion that, well, maybe it's not right to flip the switch and allow that one person to die, because you're actually executing them. You're actually executing them in the name of saving those other five.
And you're doing it without their consent.
That's correct.
Now, how does this discussion apply to what we're going to have to deal with driverless cars?
Well, because the cars are actually going to have to make these decisions, and worse yet, they're going to have to be programmed into the vehicle in advance. In other words, in the software, as this car is driving down the street, it's going to have sensors, cameras. It can measure the size of a person, and it knows how many people are in front of it. And you know, the scenario I like to bring up is take as an example. This driverless car is going down the street. Two children run out into the street in front of it. The last moment, one chasing the other. The vehicle can't brake in time to avoid running over them, but it can swerve just enough to miss them. Unfortunately, its sensors see that there's another child, but that is on the side of the road. So is it okay for the engineers to program the vehicle to swerve off the road, striking the child on the side of the road, in order to avoid hitting the two that are on the road? And in other words, is it okay for an engineer to decide that the utilitarian decision should be made by the vehicle to avoid killing two, but instead kill one?
What I find fascinating is that you brought this up among a group of people who program these cars. And they were very quick to say, the utilitarian answer. But when you drilled down, they sort of recognized, or maybe they didn't recognize, but they took an opposing position.
Right. And it's not just the people that are at that seminar. I've kind of run this little experiment with friends before. But the particular scenario you're talking about, I was at the Automotive Tech AD conference in 2015. This was in November of last year. And this conference is all about, it's by people who are building these systems. They're serving the automotive companies by putting together these software programs and these sensor packages. And all this new technology is being developed on behalf of the vehicle manufacturers for these automated vehicles. And so at the very outset of this conference, we have these icebreaker sessions where we all kind of stand around a little pedestal type table and drink a glass of wine and get to know each other. And I raised that very scenario that, well, what about, this scenario where two children run out into the street and should the car swerve and hit the other child? And they all said, well, their gut reaction was, well, yeah, we have to program the vehicle to cause the least possible amount of damage. And so the next scenario I gave them was actually one that came out of an article by yet another philosopher named Peter Singer, who is he's one of the more famous of the utilitarian philosophers. And in his article, he presents the scenario: suppose you have a brain surgeon who has to fix a patient who has a problem in their brain, and it's a dicey surgery to begin with. But the patient says, yeah, go ahead and do it because I'm in tough shape otherwise. In the same hospital, there are four other patients that could use that brain surgery patient's organs, one for the heart, one for the liver, one for the kidney, one for the lungs. And Peter Singer, and actually it was a co-authored with him and a gentleman named Dilazari Radic. And these two authors said, well, it would be appropriate if the brain surgeon, knowing that those other four patients could be saved, it would be appropriate for the brain surgeon to go ahead and slip with a scalpel and kill the patient that he's operating on, harvest the organs, and then save those other four patients who are going to die otherwise. And of course, when I presented that scenario to the same people at this conference, they said, well, no, that's outrageous.
Yep.
You can't do that. Surgeon can't do that.
We're going to continue this conversation with Tom Fournier. I have to take a break and check on the news, but we will. I find this stuff fascinating, these ethical questions about driverless cars. Who knew? But they're significant. News Radio Time, 3:37. We're talking with Tom Fournier. He has written a fantastic article, which I have linked at the blog at KOA News Radio. It's called "Will My Next Car Be a Libertarian or a Utilitarian?" And it talks about the ethics of self-driving cars. And you may think to yourself, ethics of self-driving cars? That makes no sense. But the reality is these cars have to be programmed to make decisions that drivers make every day. Now, just before the break, Tom was sort of outlining some of the philosophical conversations around this. And one of them was the trolley question, the trolley car question. And Tom, I got an email on the break about this, and it says, okay, let's throw a monkey wrench into the trolley car question. Let's say you're heading home and turn down your block. Two neighbor kids run out in front of you, and the car will either hit those two kids or swerve and hit the kid on the side of the road. But that one kid is your child. But these are the kinds of things that you can't calculate.
That's my point. We're saying that we're going to turn all of this over to a group of engineers, and they have to make decisions. Now,
right.
maybe their supervisors are going to make decisions about how to program this. Maybe there's going to be some sort of a government ethics committee that steps in and says, "No, we're going to make those decisions and tell you how to do it." But the point being that it's being, once we get in these cars, we're ceding that sort of a decision to the software that's embedded in that vehicle. Now, your viewer, though, I think, brought up a great point, and it gets much more personal if it's your family member,
sure,
or you. And I mentioned something like that in the article. So like one of the, let's go back to the scenario of two kids jumping out in front of the car, which is, we hope we don't have to deal with that in our personal lives. But so here's it happens, and the car has to make a decision. Let's suppose that there's not a child on the side of the road, but instead there's a lamppost. And is it okay for the software to program the car to swerve into that lamppost to avoid those two kids and risk your life as the passenger? Is there some duty that the programmers have to protect you above all else? And maybe you feel that it is okay, that hey, I would be wrapped in steel and there'd be an airbag, and so my chances of survival are a whole lot better than those two kids. But then let's make it complicated, like your viewer said. Let's say it's you in the car, and you have your child, two of your children, in the back seat. Now you're all probably going to survive, but is it okay for the the engineers to program the car to swerve to avoid those two kids on the street, knowing that your kids are in a car and smashing you into a lamppost? And these are the very difficult, difficult decisions. I would hate to have to make that decision myself.
Yeah.
But do I want other people to make it for me?
And that's it. And Tom, I got to tell you, I would have never for a second thought about any of this stuff in terms of, when I think about a self-driving car, I think to myself, I'm not going to be an early adopter because I'm not an early adopter of any technology. I have a streak of Luddite in me that's pretty strong. But at the same time, there's something very appealing of being able to do something else while I'm driving to work or being driven to work by a self-driving car. But now when you start thinking about this stuff, it's like, okay, do I need to have a philosophical discussion with the person who programmed this car? Because I'd like to know where their head is. You know what I mean? I'd like, if we're gonna leave these big decisions up to someone else, we don't have any way to say, okay, this engineer, what's your philosophy on life? Are you a libertarian? Are you a utilitarian? We don't get that opportunity. And
no,
I think
don't.
That's significant. My producer brought up a great analogy, which I have to give him credit for. He was reminded during our discussion of Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics. And, back from science fiction. And the first one is a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. Number two, a robot must obey orders given it to human beings except where such orders would conflict with the first law. The third law, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. I mean, it's kind of all the same thing, but it's only a matter of time before the machines rise up and kill us all, right?
Yeah, I think we have a ways to go before we have to worry about that. But, somewhere in the future.
I watch The Terminator every few years just to stay current on how to, battle back from this sort of stuff. Tom, I've got some people on the line that would like to ask questions. Would you mind taking some questions?
Sure.
Okay.
No problem.
Jamie, you're on with Tom Fournier.
Yeah, Tom stole my thunder with the question about crashing my own car into a light pole. But I guess I'd say government and ethics is kind of contrary to each other. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
So you still, but that's a legit question about if we're going utilitarian, and there's a perfect example in Colorado, you get packs of bicyclists. And if you're there's seven bicycles in front of you, well, if you're utilitarian, then yes, your car would have to crash itself into a light post and possibly you'd be killed, which nobody's going to buy that.
Yeah, exactly. And your prior listener did have a good point about ethics in government. There are ethical people in government, for sure. Many of them are. But many of government's decisions don't take into consideration the full picture in terms of ethics. And ultimately, yes, engineers are making these decisions right now, but the first couple times a car does something that we don't like and people die, then the government will step in and there will be a committee that will be set up and there will be guidelines that will eventually be developed for how these decisions are to be made. And part of the reason for me writing the article is I'm asking the question, do we really want that? Is the government the right place to make those decisions?
Generally speaking, I would say the answer is a no, just right out of the chute. Let's do this. Can we go ahead and check in with John Morrissey on our traffic, and then I'll take a call from Rick right after this with Tom Fournier. KOA News Radio Time 3:45. We're talking with Tom Fournier. He is Tom. You work in the auto safety industry as the chief technology officer at Opus Inspection. So I think you have a lot of insight to this. I do want to ask though, these big ethical and philosophical questions that you ask in this article, are they as much of a concern to the people working on the tech for these driverless cars as they are for you? Or do you kind of bring this up and have people give you the dull stare of the dairy cow? I mean, how much of this is being considered?
Well, there are people that are thinking about this in the industry, and unfortunately, it's only occurring, more recently. That the technologies have been under development for a long time. I mean, DARPA, which is part of the Department of Defense, has been sponsoring these contests for driverless vehicles. The first one was like 2004, I believe, and they're giving away huge prizes. But it was all aimed at the engineers just focusing on making the vehicle
make it work.
Not the ethics. And it's only been very recently, now that it looks like this is really going to happen and it's going to be on public roads, it's only been recently that there are a handful of people looking at the issues. And, of course, you've got attorneys for the companies involved. You've got attorneys for the insurance companies involved because someone's going to pay, right, if a car makes a decision and someone dies as a result of the decision. So, yes, there are people working on it and thinking about it, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to go the way I think it should go or you think it should go.
Right.
It'll be a group of people that decides.
We shall see. Rick has a question. Rick, you're on with Tom Fournier.
Hey, hi, Tom. I'm Andy. I got twofold one here. Has anybody ever taken in consideration a computer glitch where not only does the car wipe out the two kids on the street, but also hits the kid on the sidewalk?
Yes. More so, to answer that first question, more so from the standpoint of hackers. There's a lot of work being done. The big concern is hackers getting in, making cars do ridiculous things that kill a lot of people.
Right. And then my second point is, no matter how good the technology gets or whatever like that, there's one thing that they'll never be able to program into a computer, which will not make it totally viable, and that's humanity itself. That's what makes people make the decisions what they do to do the right thing, and you're not going to be able to program that into a computer, and it's going to cause a problem.
Yes. So I couldn't agree with you more. Actually, you're hitting on a point of that philosophers that are philosophy of mind touch on all the time, and that is, the computer is a bunch of switches, electronic switches, making yes, no, one, zero decisions. Humans, yes, our neurons are firing and in these sort of on-off patterns, but there's a lot more. There's something else happening to
right.
us.
Right.
We're feeling.
I could see it viable in a closed-loop system, but as far as taking an everyday, just taking over everything, I just never see it happening.
Well, as much as I'd love to say I never see it happen, I think it does happen. I think people will jump on board with this. The way that people have adopted incredibly privacy invading technology, so just like it's no big deal. to me indicates that people are willing to just shove those considerations aside for their own convenience. And I can't cast stones on it as I sit here with a smartphone where I've given up all of my privacy settings for everything. But I do think that convenience trumps everything else. George, I'll let you have the last question with Tom Fournier.
So here's my issue with this, and I see this from with technology that's already out there. There's another wonderful item called Mother Nature. And Mother Nature has the ability to throw 9 curveballs at technology at the exact same moment and confuse the hell out of technology. And I'll give you the prime example. There's a system that's been in use in the trucking industry for almost 20 years called the Eaton-Borad Collision Avoidance System. And it has sensors on the side of the trucks to prevent you from changing lanes into a car. Here's the problem. Drive down the road in the wintertime in heavy slush, and it will tell you that there's a car beside you, and there will be absolutely nothing beside you. And they're on like the 7th generation of this, and it still does it. Can you imagine what happens? You're driving down the road in your driverless car, and Mother Nature is throwing these curveballs at you, and your driverless car goes, oh, no one.
Yeah.
That you're absolutely right. If your point is that the technology will always be imperfect, you're absolutely correct. The question here is whether it will be adopted with its imperfections or not. And at this point, I think the economics are pointing in the direction of yes, especially when you have these massive companies with huge amounts of money throwing at trying to make this happen.
So imperfection will not stop it, though, and that's the key.
Imperfection will not stop it, yep. I don't believe.
Tom Fournier, I appreciate this article. It is, I put a link to it on my blog at koanewsradio.com. Fantastic food for thought as we move into the technological realm, and I appreciate you making time for me today.
You bet. I enjoyed it, so thanks, Mandy.
No problem. I'm sure you'll be back again. You keep writing stuff like this. We'll have another nerdy hour together soon.
All righty.
Thanks, Tom.
Take care.
And now, I'll hand the baton over to you.